we scored to go up 100 to 99, but there were 3 seconds left. And when you give the greatest player that I've known in the league 3 seconds, he'll do what he did to us. And it really changed the course of both franchises.
That was 14-year NBA vet, former Washington State standout Craig Elo. He's today's guest. Welcome to Dan Dickow's Quarantine Series on the Scorebook Live Today podcast. As the world, particularly the world of sports, is shut down due to the coronavirus, we're ramping things up a notch here at Scorebook Live. Every weekday, Dan interviews an expert in the world of sports, from star hoopers and coaches like Steve Kerr, Jamal Crawford, and Doug Christie, to seven-time Mr. Olympia bodybuilder Phil Heath. We hope you're entertained and maybe learn a thing or two as we navigate these uncertain times. The easiest way to tune in is by subscribing. In addition to our weekly Washington High School Sports News and Conversation podcast released Thursdays, hosted by myself, Andy Bueller, fellow reporter Todd Millis, Dan is bringing you interviews just like this one delivered 5 days a week. Head to wherever you get your podcast, subscribe for free, and while you're there, leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. Before we get to Dan's interview today, a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are. Now, Dan Dickow.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington. Today, our podcast during our quarantine series, where we continue to try to bring a unique guest who has a ton of experience, or it can be considered an expert in the world of sports. Many times it's a current player, a former player, a coach, a broadcaster, maybe somebody who's in a front office, an executive position. Today's guest can kind of hit all those check marks. Former player in the NBA for 15 years after starring at Washington State. He has coached at the high school, college levels, and he's been a broadcaster at the NBA and college levels. I'm lucky enough to say that I've known him for, hard to believe this now, almost 20 years. Craig Elo. Craig, how you doing?
Doing great, Dan. Yep, it's been a while. You were just this young freshman in college when I met you over in Seattle, so... Yeah, happy to be with you.
Yeah, it takes us both back quite a ways. I know you mentioned being a freshman. I was at UW. You were with the Sonics. And there were times that I would be able to go play pickup with you guys before training camp started. And for a young college player trying to find their way, it was an awesome opportunity, an awesome experience to kind of stack up their skills. But then afterwards, get a chance to talk with guys like yourself. And then learn how they take care of their bodies. If you're in that position now, what would the advice be to a kid who wants to make it to the next level as far as work ethic, taking care of their body, things that can separate them?
Well, yeah, that thing about taking care of your body was really much at the end of my career where we started. Like when I was with the Sonics, we had a guy that juiced every morning for us. So whatever you wanted or needed, he was able to do that. And then, you know, the training facilities were something that came along at the end of my career too, where everything was kind of in-house. So the weight room, so the strength coach could get you either before practice or after practice to do certain workouts with your body. And then I think always after practice, all of a sudden we were icing everything. And we even had one of those baromical, I can't even say it. What's the oxygen tank thing? Peyton. wanted it, so they got us one. And yeah, I've tried that a few times. So there were a lot of new things going on when I was ending my career that would help you do that. But as a freshman or a young kid coming out of high school, exactly what you did, I meant, it was kind of a loose kind of a thing where you could just walk into the gym and I guess you got to be known like your name and you going to UW to like let you in the door, I guess. But if you can, I meant force your way into something like that and do exactly what you just said. You know, ask questions and don't be shy. I think people always thought like if you're in the NBA that they were kind of in awe of you, that you weren't reachable, but we're all human beings. And I think anybody would offer any advice to you if you did walk up to them.
Yeah, that is the last piece that you mentioned there. I find that to be so true. NBA players, for the most part, are very open and willing to help other players at their craft because they've had other guys help them out along the way. Yep. You now had a 15-year career. But when you were growing up in Texas, before you got to college, both the junior college and Washington State, did you think there was ever any chance for Craig Elo to, one, become an NBA player and then have such a long and successful career like you had?
Oh, it was a dream come true, actually, Dan. Although as I was growing up in the 70s, I'm a graduate of high school from 79, there wasn't a lot of NBA games on TV, and maybe one a week, and that was like on a Sunday. And I can even remember watching one of the finals in the 1980s with Magic Johnson and the Lakers against Philly being taped delayed. So it hadn't gotten the star status that it has now with all the games that you can watch. But I think I didn't really watch the NBA, so I didn't really have that dream. I only dreamed about playing in college after high school. And I wasn't physically, you know, I was like 6'5 and maybe 170 pounds soaking wet. So my and I played at a high school that we played really slow down. I mean, there was no shot clock, so we didn't have to worry about, you know, the score could be in the 30s sometimes. So maybe that was against me, but the junior college route was the perfect route for me because the first 2 years, if I would have gone to any four-year D1 school, I probably wouldn't have gotten the playing time that I got in junior college as a freshman and a sophomore. And that was very beneficial to me. So I'm a big fan of junior college. And then my big break came when the Pac-10 came knocking on my door. Growing up in Texas, you know, Southwest Conference, there was some good teams. Houston and Texas always had some pretty good players and good teams. But the Pac-10, you know, had the UCLAs, the USCs, all that, and things that you when I was growing up, you know, UCLA dominated. So getting the opportunity to play at Washington State in the Pac-10 and for Coach George Raveling, I remember what really sold me on Washington State was he just asked me if I could come help him win the Pac-10. And I thought, wow, he's thinking I can help him win the Pac-10. And we got close my senior year. We were one game behind UCLA, but you know, it was a dream come true as far as playing at the college level. So I didn't really have the NBA in my sights until after my senior year, where Coach Raveling got me into a few things like Portsmouth Invitational. Phoenix had like an all-star game. So that's when it kind of became a reality that I knew that I was going to actually get a chance by being drafted. So yeah, in the 83 draft, third round, Houston Rockets, 48th player pick. So I got my break there.
Isn't that funny how all these years later, every player will remember where they were drafted into what team? I could tell you the exact same thing. I could tell you, you know, where I was at the time. And one of your good buddies, Greg Heister, was at my draft party that night. I'll have to tell you that story sometime as well. But you mentioned Coach George Raveling at Washington State. I don't think he gets as much credit for being as good a coach and as good a person unless you're truly immersed in the game of basketball. I've had a few times our paths have crossed, and he's a phenomenal human being. But you were recruited by him. You played for him. You had success with him. Talk a little bit about the impact that George Raveling had on you.
Oh, well, first and foremost, I mean, he was a pioneer. I mean, you can always when the like first Black American college coach that Washington State hired was George Raveling, and the only other Black coach that had a lot more notoriety was John Thompson at Georgetown. But when those two, you say those two names, they're kind of synonymous because of the time frame that they started in. And he was just an incredible human being. He got the knock of just being a recruiter and not really a coach with philosophy and that kind of thing. But I tell you, Dan, he was he at practice, he did everything. The first 15 minutes were all life skill things where he just sat down and talked anything other than basketball. And then when we got into practice, I mean, he drilled fundamentals into us. And then his, you know, defensive strategy was hard nose trapping, kind of get in your face kind of defense. And he was a student of the game, even when he had been a coach for many years. I mean, he was always learning new things and getting everything from other coaches. And Bobby Knight in 84 selected him as an assistant coach for the Olympic team. So he was more than just a basketball coach, though, because he did take time. Like, I think we met with him like once a week in his office where we could talk about girls, we could talk about school, we could do all of that. But I will give him the A-plus for the recruiting a bit, though, because he could sell you some swampland in Louisiana if he had to get you to come to play for him.
That's awesome. I love hearing stories about coaches that maybe the younger generation don't know as much about, yet they should. I want to fast forward now to your college career, or excuse me, your NBA career. You started in Houston, but you didn't really become a household name nationally until your time with the Cleveland Cavaliers. That Cleveland Cavalier team, to me, was very similar to John Stockton's Jazz teams or the early 2000s Sacramento Kings teams, where they were just loaded. They were unbelievably good, but probably at the wrong time because somebody else was a more dominant team or a player. Tell me about how good you guys were, and obviously with right now The Last Dance, the documentary on Michael Jordan and the Bulls coming out, how you guys just couldn't get over the hump against the Bulls.
Yeah, it was insane, Dan. And I got to tell you, though, my one of the best experiences I had was my last year in Houston, and where we played in the NBA Finals. I mean, we had Olajuwon and Sampson, and the Boston Celtics beat us 4-2. So that'll always be like the highlight of my career. I mean, I didn't play a lot in that series, but experience in the NBA Finals was pretty cool. And then I realized I was expendable. You know, the NBA is a business, and at that time there were only 12 guys on the roster, and they were, you know, there was no salary cap, but they were talking about, you know, saving money basically. So that's made me expendable. But I got picked up by the Cavaliers and Coach Lenny Wilkins, and it was a startup kind of a company, if you want to use that kind of phrase. But they drafted Brad Doherty, Ron Harper, they traded for Mark Price, and they had drafted a young man, Hot Rod Williams, the year before that had to set out. So we had four rookies that were the nucleus of the team, and then Coach Wilkins was hired to kind of put this team together. So yeah, it started in 86-87, and we had all the pieces. Big Brad was a great passing center and a good scorer down low, and we could go through the post. Mark Price, you know as well as I do, you kind of emulated some of his game in your game. So, this guy was a dead-eye shooter. He was killer at the free throw line and very competitive. And then, you know, Harper was just insane. His talent was off the chart. I mean, offensively, and he was a star piece of that puzzle. So the first few years we took our lumps. I think we won 40, 42 games first two or three years. And then all of a sudden we kind of had this breakthrough season when they actually traded for Larry Nance, and we became he had veteran leadership. So we won 57 games in the year that we actually lost to Michael and the shot with the Bulls. There was no expansion, so there was just, you know, still few teams in the league, and we played them six times because they were in our division, and we beat them all six that season, and we were the sixth seed. And you know, they came in, they stole a game from us. You know, they had that guy Michael Jordan, and then Scottie Pippen was kind of his complement, like Robin and Batman, I guess you want to say. And they got another piece of their puzzle when they traded Oakley to New York for Bill Cartwright in a big center. And it was incredible because having played them and getting the opportunity to compete against the best guy like that, I got to guard Michael all the time. You know, it was such a great challenge that anyone would want to, you know, be in my shoes. So, but that series was, you know, the best of five in my time in the league. And when you steal a game at home against the opponent, you're always, you know, the one chasing from then on. And that's exactly what happened. And came down to that game five, and it was an amazing game. I mean, we had 21,000 fans in there. It was so loud, and it was a nip and tuck, you know, they'd score, we'd score kind of a thing. And the last 2 minutes were actually a chance where they left me open, hit a few threes, and then we ran this great out-of-bounds play that we scored to go up 100 to 99, but there were 3 seconds left. And when you give the greatest player that I've known in the league 3 seconds, he'll do what he did to us. And it really changed the course of both franchises. Magic Johnson called us the team of the 90s just because of the nucleus and the way that we played. And with Coach Wilkins leading us, he thought we would win some championships. But one shot kind of took the wind out of our sail. And then even before we couldn't get past the Bulls, Dan, we were chasing the Pistons. We never played them in the playoffs, but the Pistons won a couple of championships there in the late 80s and early 90s. And then Chicago kind of paid their dues going against them. And then, yeah, we wound up playing Chicago a couple more times in the playoffs. And we just didn't have what it took to get by him. It seemed like he always, Michael always upped his game to, you know, 55, 50 points. I can remember some of those outputs. But, I mean, when you look back, we did have a great rivalry with them. And, you know, the Knicks never got past them either. When the Bulls were playing, the only time that they got past them was the year he retired and thought he was going to play baseball, and they made it to the finals. So, but after that, they win 3 more championships. So, I mean, yes, we had a nucleus that could have won some championships, but it's amazing what one kind of shot like that he hit on us changed our franchise.
Yeah, that shot, 1989 playoffs. I remember it. I was 11 years old at the time, and it was unbelievable. Really quick, can you take me back? Because I believe it was out of a timeout. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah.
What was Coach Lenny Wilkins' message in that timeout about how to guard whatever you guys thought they were going to draw up?
Well, we had the luxury of we had one timeout left also. So we knew that in that after I scored on that basket and put us up, we knew that when we went to the timeout that we were going to wait and see what they set up in and then call our own timeout and then discuss strategy. So the first timeout, when they took it, we just came out, saw the setup or the lineup and where the guys were, And when we called timeout and went to the huddle, that was when Coach Wilkins thought at that point, because Michael was on the top of the key, Brad Sellers was throwing the ball in, Pippen Cartwright and Craig Hodges were all on the baseline. So we knew that they were trying to get the ball to Michael. So we decided to double team with Larry, take him off the ball. And I was behind him, so I probably laxed a little bit on my defense because I thought Larry would kind of be staying in front of him, face guarding him. But he kind of went to the right, and Larry kind of went with him and felt kind of stumbled away from him. And then all of a sudden, I was all by myself with him when he caught the ball on the wing. And everybody else was on the baseline, so I didn't have a lot of help on that particular play. And sure enough, when I ran out to catch him on the wing, he was already coming back with a couple of dribbles to the free throw line where he stopped and went straight up. And I wasn't sliding like defensive slides you work on all the time. I was kind of running to catch up to him. So he jumped, I jumped. But my momentum was carrying me past him. He waited until I got past him. And as soon as my hand left and he saw the rim, it fell in. And you see him do that iconic Nike Gatorade, everything, that fist pumping and his team coming out to help him. And I kind of just fell to the sidelines because, like I said, we were won 57 games that year and finished second to the Pistons and, we're a higher seed. And I mean, as well as I do, when your season ends, it just – you don't want it to end. And I just kind of sat down and thought, like, oh, no. It was an amazing play because it was pretty simple, just like our play was simple before it. But it was, mano y mano, I guess, when it came down to it. And I think his vertical is a little bit higher than mine, so and he could stay in the air a lot more. So I'm gonna give myself credit for giving him Air Jordan on that.
Well, I love hearing you detail out the intricacies of that last play. But one thing I don't think you probably get enough credit for is how competitive you were as a player. And I say that because before we jumped on this phone call, I looked up something really quick. You had a career high of 31 in the NBA three separate times. Ron Harper was one. Dominique Wilkins was another. And the third was against Michael Jordan. Do you remember that game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and actually, I think if you look, if it's a game I remember, it was his high point game. He had 69. In that game, and it was an overtime game, so he got five extra minutes to get that. But yeah, I mean, again, the way the Bulls kind of played their defense in that particular game, they kind of left me open. They would leave me and go double team Price or Harper or Brad. And we had a great passing team, and they always found me. And I hit some big shots in that game, a lot of threes at that time. So, that's the biggest thing I can say is that if they leave you open, make sure you make the shot. And I got to do that a couple of times against the Bulls.
Awesome, awesome. Hands and feet, always ready as a shooter. Last thing I want to ask you about before I let you go, and we really appreciate your time, is after you were done playing, you were involved in broadcasting at the NBA level, you were involved in broadcasting at the college level, but you coached at high school and the college level. I always find it very refreshing when I see somebody that has your experience going back and coaching at the high school level. You did that at Rogers High School in Spokane for a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. What was that experience like, and what advice would you give to a high school coach at this day and age?
Oh, gosh, Dan. We moved over in 1999 from Seattle, the last team I played on. And that first year we were here in Spokane, the principal at Rogers lost his teacher coach at the end of August with school starting. And he, the principal, Mr. Williams, was my wife's student counselor when she was in high school at Lewis and Clark. So he knew that we moved back, and so he gave me a call and said, like, hey, we can have an out-of-building coach, and I'm kind of stuck right now. Would you like to do that? And I was ecstatic. I could not tell you how happy I was to be at the high school. I really didn't know any background on Rogers, that you know, that they suffered through all their sports, or teams had not done well. So I knew when I went into it that I was going to be you know, fighting an uphill battle, I guess. But in high school, you know, you're dealt the cards that you got to play with. I mean, kids, you don't have a choice of who you got on the team. But I took all those experiences that Coach Ravling did for me when I was a player, and tried to implement those at Rogers. And tough area, you know, low income, you know, there was a big dropout rate. So I tried to instill some life skills in them, more than just basketball. But that first year, we were 0-20, Dan, and I didn't have a guy that could even make a layup. And so it was, I knew that I had to work in the summers with them and take them to the tournaments and everything on the weekends. And we did. We got better. And by the last year, we did make the district playoffs. And it was because of the players working hard in the off season. And then when practice was, we didn't, it was always wanting to scrimmage, but we couldn't really scrimmage if we couldn't handle the basketball or play defense. So we did a lot of work on that. So everything I learned through all my coaches came to head when I was at high school, at the high school level. And I just really enjoyed it. It was so rewarding. We didn't win a lot of games, but just having those kids kind of look up to you and have them lead, you know, say lead us, was an incredible feeling. So a very rewarding experience at Rogers High School for 3 years. And they were asking me to become a teacher so they could keep me in the house. And that meant going back to school, and I was just not ready for that. And that's when I got my big broadcasting break with Q6 and putting all y'all, you young pups, on front at the old kennel. And I was a sideline reporter, basically. I was the sideline guy when Jeff Brown and Heister were at the table. So that leaving Rogers after 3 years of a high school coach, the broadcasting came right behind it.
That's awesome. I love to hear, you know, like I mentioned, experienced guys who have a great heart to help others jump back into high school games such as that. Craig, I truly appreciate the time. Hopefully you and your family are staying safe, and appreciate you joining me today on our Scoreback Live Washington Today podcast.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure, Dan. And yeah, anytime you need, I hope this quarantine doesn't go much longer. But I mean, you and I, it doesn't affect us. We're on that seasonal schedule anyway. So we're in our off season, so it doesn't really hurt us. But yeah, stay safe and keep your family healthy, and get your barbershop open. I need a haircut.
That'd be great. And I will say this. Enjoy the rest of The Last Dance, because when that comes on next Sunday night and the next few Sundays after that, I don't answer my phone. No kids are allowed to talk. It's focused in on the TV.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I actually called Steve Kerr the first night and asked him about, like, do you remember them following y'all around for that whole season? And he was like, yeah, but I don't think we ever knew it was going to be a big documentary, you know, 20 years later or whatever. But, yeah, it's a great thing to watch, because he will forever be linked to, you know, what he did for the NBA. And now a whole new generation of kids will see what he accomplished through this Last Dance.
Yeah, I agree. As good as LeBron is, as good as Kobe was, there is only one, and there will ever only be one, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, He was. Yeah, I think the thing that's when it's when you get notary like that, it's like being the first is the novelty of it, I guess. So, and he was the first that really took it to another level.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks again, Craig, and yeah, stay safe, and hopefully I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, take care, Dan. Thanks. We'll be right back.